Hi, and welcome to the Whole City Podcast. I'm Alex Joyner, and today we're going to be talking with Rebecca Simon-Peter. Rebecca is the founder of a leadership development program called Creating a Culture of Renewal. She's based in Wyoming, and I've had the pleasure of working with her through that program and seeing her work in books and writings throughout the United Methodist Church. She's a leader in thinking about church revitalization and creating a new culture. So she's got a new book, and it's called Forging a New Path, Moving the Church Forward in a Post-Pandemic World. It's a great conversation. We talk about everything from the Black Plague to technology. So I hope it's interesting and engaging for you. She's got a lot of great stories to tell, but also a great vision of how God is still at work in the world to create whole places. So here is my conversation with Rebecca Simon-Peter. How did you get interested in the Black Plague?
As part of the book?
Yeah.
You know, I at the beginning of the pandemic, everybody was saying the world is forever different. I thought, no, it's not. And how do you know? And then I came across, because I was scared, I didn't want the whole world to be different. And then I came across a guy named Jeremy Gucci, who is a guy, he bills himself as a trend hunter. And he had this fabulous thing on pandemics and plagues. And then I just began to see stuff on the internet about previous pandemics, like, oh, this isn't the first time we've been here. So I did a lot of research into that, you know, it just kind of showed up in my internet.
Uh-huh.
And God prompted me, I guess. And then I was like, let's take a closer look, because this is really interesting.
Well, it is the best book on the Black Plague and the United Methodist Church I have ever read. So I appreciate it. I'm here with Rebecca Simon-Peter, who is the author of a brand new book called Forging a New Path, Moving the Church Forward in a Post-Pandemic World. And I have known Rebecca for a while now, and we have been working together through a program she created called Creating a Culture of Renewal, which has helped pastors and lay people and churches throughout the United States to reimagine what church could be. And so now she's doing it for us again as we move into a new season in the life of the church. And I'm just really pleased to have her joining us here today. So welcome, Rebecca, to the Whole City Podcast.
Thank you, Alex. What a pleasure to be here on the Whole City Podcast. It's really neat. Appreciate it.
Really great to have you here. So you are based out of Wyoming. Another thing that's not really expected when you start talking about church consultations is Wyoming. But you have such a great backstory. You want to just do a short introduction of yourself well?
Yeah. Let's just say, Alex, the last place I ever expected to live, especially this long, was Wyoming. But I honestly never expected to be in the church, let alone the United Methodist Church. You may remember that I'm born and raised Jewish in an interfaith home, Jewish mom, Catholic dad, and they decided to raise us Jewish, which was great, which I loved. And I was bat mitzvah at 13 and a confirmation at 16, went on a trip to Israel with my fellow confirmands, and even moved into the Orthodox Jewish community from a spiritual awakening that I had with God. And so there I am in the Orthodox Jewish community. And also in recovery. And I have a Jesus experience. I have a waking vision of Jesus, the last thing I expected in my life. I'm a committed Orthodox Jew. And here comes Jesus. And it was hard to ignore. I wanted to. I tried to. But before I knew it, Alex, I was at the Iliff School of Theology, pushing open the front doors, thinking, what is a nice Jewish girl like me doing in a place like this? And the question was really the answer was like, who is this Jesus? And why was he showing up in my life? See, when he came to me in that vision, there was so much love and so much compassion and so much understanding. It was like heart to heart with him to me. And the Jesus I had learned about was really through the lens of history, Jewish history. So I knew about the Holocaust. I knew about the Crusades. I knew about bad Christian history as it related to Jews. I didn't really know anything about Jesus. And so here I had this experience, and before you know it, Alex, I'm in seminary, I'm getting an MDiv, I'm being appointed in the United Methodist Church, and I wind up at an African-American congregation. That's where I first joined a church and was appointed an associate pastor, and I was off and running from there, and wound up in Wyoming. As these things happen with United Methodists, for those of you that don't know, we get appointed, which means moved around. And I was appointed up in Wyoming, and I thought, 3 to 5 years tops, I'm out of here. And then I met my husband-to-be, who is my mailman. The story gets better. He was my mailman. And here I am, Alex, 23 years later, still living in Wyoming.
So sometimes your spouse does show up at the door.
Yes, sometimes. Yeah. So I was in local church ministry for about 12 years, and I really loved it. And at the same time, I sort of got burned out because I just thought there would be more miracles. And creating a culture of renewal, the program that I developed, is really the kind of material that I wished I'd had when I was in local church ministry. Mm. Like, how do you really co-create miracles with God? And now, especially post-pandemic, like, what are we supposed to do? So that's where this book
came. But, right. So yeah. So the title of the book is Forging a New Path. Why do churches need a new path, do you think, in this season?
Well, Alex, it's like this. It seems like a lot of the path that we've tried really hasn't worked. We've been in a period called the Great Decline for decades now of church decline.
So even before the pandemic, some of these trends were going on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when people say, well, when are we going to go back to normal? It's like, do you remember normal? It wasn't that great.
Yeah. You don't want to go back there.
Not in terms of like church health and vitality. It just wasn't that great. Yeah. So I do think there's an opportunity for a new path. And in the work that I've been doing over the last 15 years, my background is environmental studies. I was an environmental studies major in college. And environmental studies looks at ecosystems of things. It's not just let's save the grizzly bear or let's save this little frog or, you know, what do we do about air pollution? It looks at the entire system together. And the work that I've been doing with creating a culture of renewal looks at a whole church system, not just how do we get better preaching or should we paint the bathrooms or do we need a different preacher, but what's the culture or the ecosystem out of which we're operating? And is that ecosystem designed to provide healthy, vital life? Or is it going to be an energy sink over and over and over again? And what I've discovered is a lot of churches are energy sinks. And that's kind of an environmental term, but basically it means there's a lot of energy inputs in that are needed, but there isn't necessarily life and vitality that comes out commensurate with the energy that's put in.
Wow. That sure sounds like some of the settings that I've seen and been a part of. Yeah. It just reminds me of the old joke about the pastor who used to go and sit by the railroad tracks every afternoon. And they said, why do you come to watch the trains every day? It says, because it's the only thing that moves in this town that I don't have to push.
Yes, I get it.
There's a real sense of a weariness with how much energy it takes to get things to move. Yeah.
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 So what's the shape of this post-pandemic world that we're in?
Such a good question, Alex. And you know, it's really hard to predict the future. But when we look around, I mean, one of the things that we see is that life has changed and people simply aren't resuming their 2019 schedules. I was talking with my husband about that earlier today. We're both in recovery. I don't go to the same meetings I used to go to. And I don't even know if they exist anymore. One of the church services I used to attend doesn't even exist anymore. And so the world is different because our patterns got interrupted very dramatically. You know, everybody's life shifts and change. You shop at a different store, you have new friends, you try out a new gym. But this was such a remarkable disruption that one had to be extremely intentional about the threads of life that got picked up as we're emerging out of the pandemic. Now, that's just on a personal level about how things change. But when we look at the world, you know, in terms of technology, boy, just the things that are available online now, telehealth. You know, you couldn't get really telehealth before. Mm. Not really. Like, that was a weird thing. Like, you're going to go see
your doctor. You had to get special permission to do it. Yeah.
I know. And, you know, but we're also in a world of greater chaos and upheaval. We have the war in Ukraine. We have other wars that are going on. We have a commission on the January 6th insurrection going on. We have a much greater tolerance for misinformation and disinformation than we ever had before. We seem much more willing to sort through what's what on the one hand, and on the other hand, much less willing to sort through what's what, to engage in critical thinking. So I think in some ways we have entered the multiverse, you know, and it's all happening at the same time. And it's kind of crazy. And so in some ways we really have created these many, many little worlds that people are operating where they can choose which world they're operating in and never be bothered by any of the other worlds. And yet there are those of us, pastors and other people that hold the big picture and that hold the big vision, that are aware we've got all these different multiverses happening at the same time. How do we integrate them? How do we navigate them? How do we move the church forward in a post-pandemic world? How do we move democracy forward in a post-pandemic world? What does public health look like? The gun violence that we're experiencing. So in some ways, you know, keeping with that idea of ecosystems, we're headed towards increasing entropy, which is things fall apart. That's the way of the world. Things fall apart unless there's energy put in to upgrade and uplift and keep it going. And I think there are leaders like the worlds that we're in, Alex, leaders like you and the other leaders I have the pleasure of serving, where we're interested in how do we move things forward? Because we see this whole range of worlds out there. And how do we find the path that is ethical, that is sustainable, that is life-giving, that's divinely inspired and companioned? How do we do that? You know? So that's a lot of why I think it's time to forge a new path, because we weren't exactly there before. We had the questions, but now they're in stark relief.
Right. You mentioned that one of the things that frustrated you early on in your church experience was that you wanted to see miracles, and there weren't many stories of miracles, but a lot of your work has been about developing the eyes to see those. Where are you seeing some signs of adaptation and hope and miracles emerging?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You, Alex Joyner, you're doing such beautiful work in reclaiming your city and uncovering and, you know, looking at and reframing racist narratives and events and bringing healing to a city that needs it, emblematic of a country, emblematic of a world. So it's in these particular relationships and particular pastors and congregations that are taking on big, bold visions. You know, a couple of years ago when George Floyd was murdered, a number of the pastors in our Creating a Culture of Renewal network took on ministries to bring healing and to bring, you know, racial justice and equity and new conversations. And I see you doing that. We have a number of pastors and congregations that are finding innovative ways to connect with their neighborhoods, you know, with making sure people don't go hungry, with making sure that vulnerable groups are protected. We've got one pastor who raised $400,000 in a year, I think, $400,000, so that the church, this is in Oklahoma, could build homes, foster homes for sibling groups, so that kids who wound up in foster care, quite often through poverty or drug use, but, you know, a lot of orphans now with COVID, didn't have to be separated. I mean, what a kindness. And in my Jewish background, we would say, what a mitzvah, like what a good deed that is, you know? I mean, what a generous act that is. And so what I see is so much generosity of spirit that is being carried forth into communities, not just happening behind the walls of a church or the shut doors of a church, but out in the community, you know, really positively impacting the community. So I see so many signs of hope in the world. I think the world is basically a generous place, I think the world is basically a place of love and goodwill. Everybody? No. But I do think that's the underlying God impetus, the divine impulse, the divinity within creation. Yes. Goodness, generosity, love, all of that is there.
Wow. That's a dangerous vision, Rebecca, Simon, Peter. That's that's a very that's the kind of hope that feels like it could really disrupt things. One of the things that you say through our work in creating a culture of renewal, but also in the books, is just how too much of our work can sometimes get can appear to be church improvement programs instead of a mission for the world.
Yeah.
Can you say a little more about that and how you encourage the folks you work with to think that way?
Yeah. Well, you know, I always think back about Jesus, clearly a Jewish guy, right? But his vision wasn't make Judaism great again. Mm. It wasn't about a new and improved Judaism. He could have done it, right? But he didn't. He really held forth that vision of the kingdom. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Earth, people, you know, it's like the whole earth, you know, the whole earth was his concern. Mm. And so I think that's, and of course, Jesus's vision was an ancient Hebrew vision. So, you know, throughout the scriptures is this vision of something bigger than who we are and bigger than where we are. And that impulse, I think, needs to be in the church today, because we've so much gotten into survival. Remember, we're in this great decline, right? We've so much got into survival, we've forgotten the powerful and beautiful message we carry. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And we may labor our whole lives to see just a sliver of that brought to life. But what a beautiful purpose of a life, you know, to do that. So I think when we just focus on church improvement plans, we're missing the big picture. And honestly, if church improvement plans worked, we wouldn't be having this conversation today, right? We'd be like, oh, we just pick up post-pandemic where we were in 2019. Only it doesn't work, because we're not designed for that. We're designed to carry good news, spread good news, share, be the good news, right? Now, I don't have anything against congregations and as spiritual communities, nothing. In fact, it's in my book. I think we need to be deeper in our spiritual community with each other. But one of the ways that spiritual community lives is by giving itself away. And that's the part that we haven't, I think we haven't done either very well. Being spiritual community rather than sort of an organizational group that meets with some spiritual aims, but spiritual community that then gives itself away. Mm. So yeah, that's my thought about that.
Yeah. So, and that is one of your big themes in here is embracing spirituality as one of the things that will keep us, make us a good garden for whatever is going to grow next. So it's not just new things and shiny new objects for the future, but it's also going back to some things. Can you say a little bit more about the spirituality as a force for change?
Yes. I have a secret history, Alex. I started off religious, and then I became more religious. And then I was like, to hell with religion. And then I became religious again. And then I became spiritual and religious. Then I became spiritual, but not religious. And now I'm back to spiritual and religious. But you know, there's a whole movement afoot. And that is people leaving the churches. And they're leaving the churches, and they've been identified as spiritual, but not religious. And what they've said to us basically, well, I mean, in the church, you know, we've sort of bemoaned, oh my gosh, well, first we've said, what's wrong with these people leaving the church? Then we thought, what's wrong with us that they're leaving us? But what if there's nothing wrong here? What if it's just that a deepening sense of spirituality and almost a universality to spirituality is actually a normal part of faith formation? James Fowler, formerly alive and formerly at, what was he at, Emory?
Emory, yes.
Yeah, he was all about that. And he wrote The Stages of Faith Development, and he based his work on Eric Erickson's model and other models like that, that as you age and grow, you know, you're going to go through various developmental crises and stages and growths and breakthrough. Well, what if the same thing is true with spirituality? And he found, lo and behold, it is. And it turns out that the way people form their faith, whether it's, you know, like denominational or just whatever, you know, the structure that gives meaning to their life, that there's predictable stages that it goes through. And the stage right before spiritual but not religious is, yep, this is my, I'm totally paraphrasing, but like, yep, this is my church. This is what we believe. This is what we do. And this is how we, you know, live the best life possible. Well, what happens at some point in that stage is that people begin to notice, there's paradoxes in this. There's contradictions. And in the world, in many ways, we're seeing that now. It seems like the Bible says you shouldn't be gay. It's an abomination to God. Here we go. But then all of a sudden, you've got a kid who's gay, or you've got a beloved who's gay, and you think, well, wait a second. Does that mean God doesn't love them? It's like paradoxes like that, right? Or was the earth made in 7 days? Well, what about evolution? Like, there's all these paradoxes. And my neighbors don't seem to be bad people, but they don't seem to believe the way this says you should believe. Paradox. So the longer you live, the more you open your eyes, the more paradoxes there are out there. And so what people end up doing often is, to preserve sanity, they say either no to that or no to this or no to the whole thing. But the spiritual but not religious have said, there's something good here. There's something good about God. There's something good about me. I'm off to discover it. The container I've been in, the church environment or the synagogue environment or maybe even the mosque environment, seems limiting because it says, here are the limits of belief. Here are the limits of acceptable understanding. But my own spirit is saying, wait, you know, there's more, or I have to find a way to wrestle this. I went through that when I went from being an Orthodox Jew to being a Christian. Wait, it's like sleeping with the enemy, right? Mm-hmm. So same thing. So what if, Alex, what if people could actually make that transformation from Fowler's stage 3 or 4 to stage 4 or 5? I can't remember the stages exactly. No. What if people could do that in church? What if church itself expanded to include space for more spirituality rather than, oh, you got to go over there to find that, or we don't do that around here. Spirituality is our birthright. It's biblical. You look at the Bible and it's one story after another, one crazy story after another about how God appears to people and how people interact and how this intimacy between God and people. And what we've done in the church and synagogue, et cetera, over the centuries, is we've sort of mined those stories for do's and don'ts and morality. But what if you just took that away? Not saying it's not important, but what if you just took those lenses off and just looked and said, oh my God, from, you know, page one to page whatever, chapter one to, you know, it's encounters with God. It's all encounters with God. It's all about people discovering something about themselves as they interact with God. What if that's the actual journey and not get it right? Don't do this, do that, don't do this, do that. So I think the church has all the tools necessary. We just need to do some reframing to move from sort of a one-way worship of God to a mutually enhancing spiritual encounter where we come alive, God comes alive, and God is, you know, miracles and God are within us and all around us.
Now, for some reason, I'm thinking of improv as you're talking, you know, instead of saying no, you say yes, and
yes, and
it's got, and that's the generative moment when you can pull together those pieces of the paradox and see the a greater unity beyond. Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, one thing that is new for our generation of church is the way that we've had to embrace technology in the last few years. But that's also, you see, as one of the sources of hope, is the ways that technology might be used in the future. Can you talk a little bit about, I called it techno-optimism.
Techno-optimism, yes.
You can, I don't know how optimistic you are about it, but it's, but you do talk about it, and I think it's going to be with us whether we like it or not. So.
Yeah. You know, I did a lot of study of the Black death, the bubonic plague. That was a 300-year pandemic. Can you imagine, Alex, 300-year pandemic that raged across Europe from the 1300s to the 1600s? And new technologies were born out of that time. The book was the bubonic plague's tech advance. The book didn't really exist. The printing press in the book, you know, came out of that. Yeah. And out of that also came the Protestant Reformation. Like, that was all being shaped in that cauldron of massive death that happened during the pandemic. And so, you know, when the plague was over, their pandemic was over, none of them said, oh, thank goodness, we can be done with the book now. You know, like, let's just go back to the way it used to be. In the same way, I'm a techno-optimist because there are beautiful things that have come from Zoom. Look at us, you and I talking right now, you know, your podcast, so much of the work that we do. Now, am I a total techno-optimist? Like, do I think everything happening on Facebook and Twitter? Oh, God, no. No, 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 no. But I think easy ways to see that tech has really helped us. You no longer have to travel, you know, 5 hours for a 1 hour meeting. You can worship with others if you're indisposed, ill, housebound, or traveling. But even more, there's more, I think, that the tech culture has brought us rather than not just the actual technology. I mean, Alex, there are going to be people listening to your podcast and considering it, you know, kind of a worshipful, thoughtful experience as they're working out, as they're running or gardening or something like that. So it's a way, you know, having these digital resources supplements people's walk of faith. You know, it used to be radio was that, right? Like Christian radio. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the new version in a way of Christian radio, only there's a lot more. There's a wider variety of, you know, faith resources that are available. But while I was researching Forging a New Path, I came across an author named Ryan Panzer, P-A-N-Z-E-R. And he talked about the culture of digital technology that I thought was really interesting. He named questioning, creativity, collaboration, and connection as the four sort of, what's the word I want, like pillars of digital technology. And that even if your church isn't going to be online, or you're not going to do podcasts, or you're not having hybrid worship, or you're not doing things like that, or online giving, maybe even if you're not doing that, think about the way digital technology has reshaped culture and bring those values and those practices into the life of the church. I thought that was brilliant. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Especially because, you know, in the church, we joke, but it's kind of true. The answer to every question is Jesus. And not that Jesus is unimportant in any way, but in a way it's kind of funny. Like, if you already know the answer, why ask a question? But what if you didn't already know the answer? What if questions were permissible, allowable, encouraged even? Now, Jesus, coming from a Jewish background, you know, every good Jew answers a question with another question. And Jesus did it all the time. So how is it that we've settled into every answer is Jesus when he himself would not say, I am every answer. Let's ask some new and different questions. So it opens us up. And I think that's really important. I think that's what younger people are saying is, why can't there be different answers? Why can't we ask new questions? Frankly, my 86-year-old dad was born and raised in the Catholic Church, left because there weren't enough answers. Mm. So it's not just younger people. But, you know, if we were to take collaboration to heart and the connectivity and the creativity that's present in the pews, as it were, and not just feel we as leaders need to generate everything or do everything. But that actually gets us back to an ancient way of looking at things. The way Jesus worked with his people, he was apostolic. He sent everybody out. Everybody had a part. Everybody had a part to play. And in some ways, they prepared the way for him. And their work was just as important as his work. So I think that culture, the culture of digital technology, has a lot to teach us about new ways that are also ancient ways that can really revitalize the church.
Retro and techno.
That's retro techno. There we go.
Retro techno optimist. So what is your hope for folks who pick up this book or churches that pick it up?
Yeah. So my hope is, one, that you'll just read it and share it and read it with other people and read it together. I think books like this are really best read together because you're going to have ideas. And so there are three questions that I heard so many people asking. When do things go back to normal? How do we do more with less? And how do we get people back to church? And I address those three questions in the book. And basically I say, we're going to have to look someplace different. And the answers that I came up with is, the next normal is spirituality. The church has to go deeper in its spirituality. That's normal. It's the next normal. And then how do you get people back to church? Well, what if you didn't invite them back to church or to church? What if you invited them into spiritual community? And so reframing how we think of, get people to church and, hope they, come to worship and then they serve on a committee and maybe they'll give money and, maybe the mortgage won't be such a heavy load to bear. Sorry for giving away all the state secrets, but, what if we really invited them into spiritual community where you're known and loved and it's a place to explore the questions and the creativity and the connection and the collaboration and actually like come to a place where you could hope to hear from God. Not have it one-way communication, worshiping God, but hear from God. And then thirdly, many people wondering, how do we do more with less? What if we actually have more than we ever thought we had before because we stripped away so much stuff, the world stripped away? And, looking really from a space of abundance and using technology as a part of that to bridge some of the gaps and to enter into the next century, some of us are still back in the old century, enter into that next century. And really, really it's about developing spiritual community and using all the tools that we have and not seeing things from a space of being impoverished by the pandemic, but a space of being blessed, even with all the losses, being blessed, finding the blessing in the pandemic. What I'm hoping. Yeah. Churches will take it to heart and deepen themselves even as they reach out.
I appreciate your being with me today. You've helped me see abundance in the world around me and around the churches where I've been. So I know you're doing that for a number of churches around the country, and just really grateful for this new way that folks can get to know the journey you've been on. Thank you, Rebecca. I've been talking with Rebecca Simon-Peter. She is author of Forging a New Path, Moving the Church Forward in a Post-Pandemic World. Earlier, she wrote a book called Dream Like Jesus, Deepen Your Faith and Bring the Impossible to Life. She's written on the Green Church, too. So that's an interest we didn't talk about today, but it's certainly there, too. And I'm proud to say she's my mentor in ministry. So thank you, Rebecca, again, for being here today.
Thank you, Alex. And I'm proud to call you friend and colleague. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Great. All right. Well, blessings on you. And thanks for being here today.
Thank you.